The 100 Years' War. The White Company period, 1337 to 1359. The Gascon companies move north and east. Now in May of 1358, the estates of Languedoc met at Toulouse, where they were persuaded to swallow their traditional distaste for taxation in time of truce and to finance an army of 2,000 men for 60 days. A scheme of defense was devised, directed by local captains appointed for each seneschalie. Fortified places were to be inspected to ensure they were either properly defended or they'd be demolished. There was, of course, a world of difference between ordaining these matters and carrying them out. But some of them undoubtedly were carried out. There are signs of the work on the urban fortifications of Languedoc in the spring and summer of 1358, and some evidence that cavalry forces had been raised at short notice to reinforce vulnerable points on the march as danger threatened them. Although official missives continued to lament the weak defenses and anarchic conditions in Languedoc, the truth was that the region was well off by comparison with almost every other part of France. The outlying dioceses, particularly those of Rodez and Cahors, suffered from continual incursion by the Gascon companies. However, the three principal seneschalies were virtually untouched. Both the major threats to their security in the period, from the archpriest's horde in 1357 and from Robert Knowles in 1359, were beaten off with ease. Now, the main consequence of the growing authority of Bordeaux and the remarkable resilience of Languedoc was to drive the Gascon companies north and east towards Auvergne and the mountains of Massif Central. In 1357, these had become the principal field of the Gascon operations. Auvergne was a large province comprising several geographically distinct regions. Haute Auvergne, corresponding to the Diocese of Saint-Fleur and the Royal Billage of the Mountains, was a thinly populated area of lava hills, dense forests, and high grassland used by shepherds as summer pasturage. To the north, beyond the Mont Dur, the landscape opened into the broad valley of the Allier, a rich and prosperous land, which contained the chief cities of Auvergne, the ecclesiastical city of Clermont, and its twin town of Montferrand, and Rome, which was the administrative capital. West of the Mont Dur, extending towards the high Limousin plain, lay the scattered territories of the county of La Marche, poor land shared between rye, meager pasturage, and dense forest, which had for many years been dominated by the princes of the House of Bourbon. Auvergne had none of the advantages of Languedoc in the fight against the companies. The region had lost its autonomy when it was absorbed into the royal domain at the beginning of the 13th century. It had no tradition of political organization. The principal estates, which had come into existence in the last decade in response to the crown's demands for war finance, met regularly enough during the crises of the following decade. But their authority was not always accepted by taxpayers, and they proved to be a very ineffectual forum for organized resistance. The defense of the province depended mainly on two royal bailiffs and on the Dukes of Bourbon. None of them was in a strong position. The authority of the bailiffs had suffered grievously from the collapse of the government in Paris, and of course for a lack of funds. As for the Bourbons, they had recently experienced some serious reverses. The previous duke had died at Poitiers, leaving his domain crippled by debt. His younger brother Jacques, Count of La Marche, the ablest soldier of the family, had been captured and taken off to England. The fortunes of the house were left in the inexperienced hands of the late duke's widow and his 9-year-old son. The first Gascon bands entered Auvergne from the west in 1355. At the outset of their operations, they were confined to the district of Arlac and the foothills of the Cantal. In the last few months of 1355, they became bolder. An attempt on Saint-Fleur was defeated. Then in March of 1356, they found a foothold in the county of La Marche, where they sieged the walled town of Feltin and made it into a base for raiding across the mountains and into the valley of the Allier. They attacked the suburbs of Clermont. Their spies were found reconnoitering the defenses of Isor. At Saint-Pourcon, the mint had to be temporarily closed and moved within the castle walls. These events caused much alarm in the region. The estates of Auvergne met in an emergency session. The bailey organized the siege of Feltin, which continued fitfully from April to August, but without effect. Arnaud Albert of Cubzac, the captor of Feltine, belonged to a family which had been intimately concerned in the looting of Perigord and Quercy. The rape of Auverage during the next decade was to be largely a cooperative venture of his famous and prolific clan. Arnaud was brought out of Feltine by the Duke of Bourbon in the autumn of 1356 for 21,000 écus, then one of the largest ransoms ever paid for the delivery of a single castle. He must have promised to withdraw from the province, but he certainly did not withdraw very far. Instead, he joined forces with his cousin, Arnaud Amiel d'Albert, and together they occupied the castle of La Chapelle-Telfier, just across the border in the Diocese of Limoges. The two men set up a new center of operations there, and another fortress further south in the fortified manor of Beaumont near Tulle, and from these places they recruited fresh bands of adventurers from every part of the southwest. Early in 1357, the Gascons reinvaded Auverage. They occupied Volvic on the eastern face of the Mont Dôme and the great keep of Sermont, only 15 miles from Arnaud's formal headquarters at Feltine. Other Gascon bands pushed up the valley of the Allier and established themselves in the Bourbonnais. The defense failed throughout the region. Jean de Boulogne, the king's brother-in-law, served briefly as royal lieutenant during the wretched winter of 1356-57 without achieving anything. The nobility of the Auverage was paralyzed by its own quarrels and divisions. Some of them tried to ride out the tempest by making tactical alliance with the looters. The provincial estates met in January 1357 and voted fresh subsidies, and more was voted later. But although the first fruits of these taxes were relatively abundant, as the disorder spread, collection became increasingly difficult. As the companies extended their operations, the tax base was gradually destroyed, and with it the last prospects of expelling them without outside assistance, a vicious cycle which much of France soon experienced. The Truce of Bordeaux made no difference at all at the fate of the Auverage. In the first place, its enforcement was largely entrusted to the bandits themselves. The four conservators nominated by the Prince of Wales included Arnaud d'Albert himself, together with his brother and another of his cousins, all of them active protagonists in the guerrilla war. Some 6 months into the truce, Arnaud took into his service his bastard cousin, Bertocat, who was probably the ablest and certainly the most brutal of this ambitious tribe. Bertocat d'Albert, like many of his kinsmen, had begun his career in Quercy and probably served under his half-brother at Fons. In early autumn of 1357, after Fons had been bought out, he apparently appeared in the Auverage at the head of Arnaud's company and reoccupied Semur. Here he established a permanent base and resumed the spoliation of Auverage as if nothing had happened. The Dauphin's council was totally helpless. They were prevailed upon to appoint a captain for each of the two billages, but neither of these men made the least impression on the companies. The nobility of Auverage raised another local army, and they called it the Army of the Sermont Front, but it couldn't even contain Bertucat's men within its own walls. Now, this is a section that's relatively untouched in your standard study of the Hundred Years' War, but the destruction in the Auverage area is typical of what took place in most of France during this White Company period. So that's why I'm spending a little bit more time on it, looking at these particular individuals. So we'll pick up with the continued spoliation of Auverage next time. Now, the sources for this, the 100 Years' War by Nylands, the 100 Years' War by Perrois, and the 100 Years' War, Volume 2, Trial by Fire, by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.